For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, March 27th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about our favorite Jason Statham movies. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, Chris, in honor of A Working Man, which comes out in theaters technically tonight, but officially tomorrow, I thought it would be fun to talk about Jason Statham and try to come up with like a joint top five list of our favorite Statham films. Before we get into that, though, I wonder if you have anything that stands out to you about him as a performer. Is there anything to you that makes Jason Statham special?
You know, I feel like a lot of times when people criticize certain actors, they'll say, this actor doesn't have range. And I don't always think that's such a bad thing. Like, I think Keanu Reeves is an actor who doesn't have like a wide range, but I think Keanu Reeves is really good at what he does. And that's kind of how I look at Jason Statham. Like, Jason Statham does not have a lot of range. I don't think he can play, you know, a whole walk of different characters, but he can play certain types of characters and he plays them very well. He's very good at playing like frowning badasses. And, you know, I'm sure you could say like, I'm sick of him playing the same role over and over again, but I think he's really good at that. And there's something, it's interesting when actors find their niche and sort of like drill into it, you know? And I think he's very good at doing certain things. I also think he's just sort of tends to gravitate towards the same sort of role. Like, I don't think anyone's really sort of like tried to give him something different. I would kind of be interested if someone was like, let's put him in, you know, like a period piece or something. Like, I can't imagine him like in like a Pride and Prejudice sort of movie, but like, I kind of want someone to try that because I want to see what he would do in that, but I don't know if he'd be good in that or not. But you know, I don't think I've ever watched a Jason Statham movie and been like, he was terrible in that. Like, I've always sort of just like enjoyed what he does. And I think that's kind of commendable.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I never really thought about it in those terms, but I think even in the very bad Jason Statham movies, which there are many, I think he is always bringing it. And he's always, it's just kind of like whether or not the movie around him can live up to or support him as a performer, you know, kind of live up to his potential. So yeah, I wrote down three things that I thought kind of make him special. The physicality is one, like he does many of his own stunts. And that is, I guess you've got people, you mentioned Keanu. I mean, there's those videos of like him on gun ranges and stuff preparing for the John Wick movies. So, and like the Tom Cruise of it all obviously looms over all of the action genre as it were. But, and I guess also you have like people like Tony Jaa and the kind of like Indonesian, like the Raid and like that mixed martial arts kind of component of action cinema or whatever. But Statham has been doing this for whatever, 25 years or something. And yeah, he just has this physicality that that I think there's a consistency to it. Like, I don't think some of these other actors have had the longevity that he has had in terms of doing his own stunts for that amount of time, that sustained amount of time. So that's one thing. The attitude, he's just got like this self-assured swagger to many of the characters that he plays. And I think it's backed up by like a lot of those characters are capable of justifying that swagger with action, which I think always helps and kind of makes it fun to watch him kind of bruise his way through a movie. And then his voice too. Like, I don't think we should discount the fact that it's just fun to listen to him say one-liners or like gravely intone about what it is that he's about to do, you know? So I don't know if you have any thoughts on any of those three things.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the voice. Like, I can't, like, I don't think there's like, I can't think of a movie he's done where he hasn't used like his normal accent. Like, I don't think there's like a movie where he does an American accent. I could be wrong. Maybe there is one that I'm not thinking of, but it just, it's so distinct to him, that that sort of accent he has, that like, it just sort of like, it really does enhance his performances. It's just like, mm-hmm. you can like hear his voice in your head when you like to see him. It's like you automatically associate his voice with him.
Yeah. And it's fun to imitate too. Like there's I think Schwarzenegger and Stallone got huge, not only because they were like great presences and were in a bunch of great movies, but there's like this meta quality of like them as kind of pop cultural figures that people can mimic and like have fun joking around about with friends and stuff. And Statham definitely has that. He has such a distinctive voice that that I think it helps kind of like add a little bit of extra something to his persona, as it were. So
yeah.
Okay. So I guess there's one thing I wanted to run by you, Chris, before we start trying to narrow this down. I think there are two modes of Statham performances. There's one where he's the leading man, and then there's the other where he's like a member of an ensemble. And I think it might be nice if we can to get at least one ensemble type of piece into our list to represent the fact that he can do both things very well under the right circumstances. But I don't know. If you disagree with that, let me know.
No, I agree with that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I was trying to figure out the best way to go about doing this. I think Statham has something like 60 movies. Did you happen to like count how many you've seen or like how many you haven't seen? Is there, what's your relationship with his filmography overall? Because he's been in a ton of stuff.
You know, I'm looking at his resume now, his filmography now, and I've seen a lot of these, honestly, which is, I don't know what that says about me, but I, like, there's some I haven't, like, I've never seen, like, Wild Card. I don't know what that is. I've never seen that. there are a few I have not seen, but I've seen a large amount of his movies, like, all the way back to his beginning of his career, really. Like, his first film was Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and then he followed it up with Snatch, which were both Guy Ritchie movies. And so I've kind of been with him from the beginning. Like, I remember when those movies came out, and they were very, I don't want to say they were big, but they were like, if you were like a film nerd when those movies came out, you definitely saw them, because they were part of that like post Pulp Fiction era where everything was like very cool and stylized and about criminals and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you see those movies in theaters when they came out, or did you come to them a little bit later? Because I saw those, I think, in college in like 2004, 2005-ish or something.
I saw Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels on VHS. I saw Snatch in theaters. Like, I remember when that came out, that was sort of like a big deal because it had like a big cast. Like, Brad Pitt was in it, obviously, in like a supporting role. And I remember seeing that in theaters.
Nice. Okay, so maybe that's a good place to start. Do you think that Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels or Snatch deserves to be in this list? Because I'm like, what do you think about those movies overall? And what do you think about them in terms of like them being Jason Statham movies for the purposes of this conversation?
I mean, if we want to talk about like his ensemble movies, I think between those two, those count as ensemble because like he's not really, he's like the lead in those, but he's like part of the group in that. I would probably go with Snatch over Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, just because like of those two, Snatch is the more memorable movie. It's just, it's so hyper stylized and very funny and very, I mean, I haven't seen it in a long time. I'm very curious to see how it holds up, but I just remember it being like sort of like a big deal when it came out. And like a lot of it still like sticks out in my memory of like how funny it was. The cast is like just phenomenal. Like Stephen Graham is in it. Obviously Stephen Graham's having like a moment right now, thanks to Adolescence, but he was in that. Dennis Farina is in that. And one of my favorite things in that movie is where like, he just like, he's like this American guy who goes to London and like, he just has like a miserable time. At the end of the movie, he's at the airport and they're like, do you have anything to declare? And he's like, yeah, don't go to London. And I just like thought that was always like so funny. And like Brad Pitt's doing his very weird accent in that movie. I don't know. I really liked Snatch when it came out. Between those two movies, Snatch is the one I liked the most.
Okay, maybe we can try to narrow down the ensemble entry now. So I'm thinking about other ensemble movies that he's been in, and The Italian Job comes to mind. I'm a big fan of that one. What do you think about The Italian Job remake?
You know, I saw it. I didn't love it too much, so I can't really comment. Like, I haven't seen it in so long. The biggest thing I remember from that movie is Edward Norton is in it and he did not want to be in it. It was like a contractual thing. Like, he got forced into being in it. And so he gives like a really bland performance in that movie. So whenever I think of the movie, that's the number one thing I think of, is that Edward Norton was forced into making this movie and he hated every minute of it.
That's fascinating. I've never heard that. He's such a skeez ball in that movie. And it seems like he was having a little bit of fun. But man, that's fascinating. I'll have to go back and read up on the Italian Job. Okay, so that was one that I would maybe toss into contention for being in the ensemble thing. There's also the Expendables quadrilogy, I guess it is now, because Expendables 4 came out whenever that was, last year or the year before. What do you think about the Expendables movies? How many of those have you seen?
I think I've seen at least two. I think I've seen three. I did. The third one is the one with Mel Gibson, so I did see them. They're terrible. They're like probably like the biggest missed opportunity in film history, because the idea of all these action guys coming together is such a cool idea in theory. And the movies themselves are just really disappointing. I remember that first one in particular, because they made a big deal of like the marketing of being like, all these guys are in it. But like, for the most part, a majority of the bigger names, like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis, like they have like very quick cameos. Like they're not actually in the movie. And I just remember this being like, these are not good. Like they're wasting this really cool idea on whatever this is. And
Yeah, I agree. I think Expendables 2 is my favorite of the first three. I didn't even bother seeing the fourth one. But even that, I don't think belongs in this list. So we can go ahead and just cross all of those off. The Fast and Furious movies are interesting. I'm obviously a huge fan of those movies. Anybody who's listened to this podcast for a long time knows that. Chris, remind me where you stand on the Fast movies. Like, are you caught up? Are you up to date on all of those? What's your deal there?
I'm actually not up to date. I'm like an agnostic of the Fast and Furious movies. I've tried to really love them because I love big, silly, over-the-top action movies. Like, I love that idea. And I just can't quite get into them. They all sort of like blend together in my mind. I do like the very first one with The Rock in it. I don't know which one that even is. Like,
that's Fast Five.
Yeah, I remember liking that. And I remember sort of liking the one that James Wan directed, which I don't remember what that is. That what is that?
That's Furious 7.
All right. I remember liking that when I saw it. And I have seen Hobbs and Shaw, which I thought was terrible.
Me too.
which is like, so yeah, I'm like, I don't want to say I dislike the series, because I don't like actively hate it, but I've never been able to get into it as much as I wish I could.
Man, there's a moment in The Fate of the Furious, which is the eighth movie, where Statham is on a plane and he's fighting with a baby. Like, there's a baby that he's protecting, and he has to like put headphones on the baby so the baby doesn't hear the gunshots and stuff. And he's just like wrecking dudes on this plane and like going back and forth between hand-to-hand combat and like checking on this baby, which I think is Dominic Toretto's child. it's so ridiculous, but that scene is really fun. I'm not arguing that any of the Fast movies really should make the cut here, because he's a villain in that franchise, but I kind of think like he's not essential to the formula of what makes those movies special. So for the purposes of this conversation, I don't really think we need to include any of those. So that'll cross a bunch off there. I'm trying to think if there are any other like major ensemble movies that he's been a part of. I mean, you've got stuff like The Bank Job, which is like a pretty decent movie, kind of a mid-tier Statham movie, I would say, that has a good ensemble to it. But I think if you're cool with that, yeah, I think we can just go ahead and lock Snatch in as our ensemble pick.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's take a break. Then we'll come back and fill out the rest of our top five list.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All right, so Chris, I wrote down kind of three tiers of Statham movies. I have a top tier section, a mid tier section, and what I just wrote as bad tier. Okay. So I want to list some of the bad tier movies, and you tell me if you disagree with the placement that I did here, and maybe we can switch some of these out or elevate one of these bad tier things up into our finalist list or whatever. So Operation Fortune Ruse de Guerre, which I think you and I saw and talked about, kind of a weird Guy Ritchie movie that basically just got dumped and like did not have a big conversation around it at all. Statham plays ostensibly the lead in the movie, and there's like an Aubrey Plaza romance, and there's a really fun Josh Hartnett performance where he plays a movie star that gets kind of roped into this undercover op that's going on there. Do you think that this movie should be in the conversation for the best Statham film?
No, I wanted to like this because I really like that cast. I love Aubrey Plaza. I love Josh Hartnett. But yeah, I just thought this was like a big swing and a miss.
Yeah. Okay. So I have Hobbs and Shaw in there. I have both all the rest of the Expendables movies. There's one called Parker that came out in around 2013 or so. I don't know. The thing, I mean, you mentioned Fast and Furious movies kind of blending together in your head. A lot of the mid-tier and bad Statham movies kind of blend together, like stuff like Parker and Killer Elite and Revolver and Redemption. There's just a lot of these like one word titles that I'm just kind of like, I couldn't really tell you what the plot is of these. I don't really have memories of or specific memories of like him doing anything in particular in any of these movies. So The Mechanic is another one that I had in there. Yeah, Killer Elite, Parker, Transporter 3 is absolutely terrible, especially compared to the first two. And then a movie called Chaos, which I know I saw it, but again, I could not tell you a single thing about it. So any of those jump out at you as being like, oh, that's better than you think, Ben, you fool.
No, yeah, I would say we could swiftly move beyond those.
Okay, so up in the mid-tier section, I have F9, Fate of the Furious, Fast and Furious 6, and then, yeah, so we've got Homefront, which is a movie that I believe Sylvester Stallone wrote, if I'm getting my facts correct, and James Franco plays the villain in that one. It's kind of like supposed to be like a Southern fried crime story. I don't really remember much about that one. I just remember it being like, okay. So I don't really know if that one deserves to be elevated into the upper echelon of what we're talking about here. Same with a movie called Safe from, I think this was around 2012. Yeah. Where he's like trying to protect a little girl. There's Cellular, which came out earlier-ish in his career, which was the movie that stars Chris Evans, and I think Kim Basinger is in that as well, and he plays the villain in that. And then Death Race, which is the remake of Death Race 2000 that came out, when was that, probably 2010-ish or somewhere around there, 2008, excuse me. And he plays the lead in that one. And that's a pretty ridiculous movie, but it's like, it's not as ridiculous as the 1970s Death Race 2000. So I'm not crazy about it because I kind of feel like it's a little too like dark and gritty for its own good. Whereas Death Race 2000 is like so over the top and ridiculous that I had a lot more fun watching that one. But yeah, what do you think about any of those?
Yeah, I don't know if any of them belong on the list. I do want to give a shout out to Safe, which I think is actually better than people might realize. That is actually the people involved with that. Some of the people involved with that are from the 8711 team, which is, of course, the team that does the John Wick movies. And if you watch Safe, a lot of stuff that happens in that movie feels almost like a test run for what John Wick will become. It feels a lot like the John Wick movies. So I actually like recently, probably like 2 or 3 years ago, I watched this just to check it out. It was like streaming and I was surprised it was like a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I don't think it's like amazing, but it does have like very similar vibes to what John Wick would become. So I think if you like the John Wick films, I would recommend seeking this out because you'll get a lot of similar sort of atmosphere to it.
Okay, cool. All right, so I have not seen either of the Meg movies, the Jason Statham fights a giant shark films. And what's your relationship to those? Do you think either of those belong here?
Probably not. I think the first one is kind of fun. The second one is not really good at all, which is weird because like Ben Wheatley directed it, and Ben Wheatley is a really interesting filmmaker, but he sort of like, I don't know if it was just like a for hire gig or what, but they're like, for movies that are about Jason Statham fighting a giant shark, they should be a lot more entertaining than they are. So yeah.
Yeah. There's one called Blitz that came out around the same time as Safe and Redemption. And I honestly could not tell you if I even saw this one. I saw so many of these movies in theaters at the time, but like it's been at least 10 years now and I just don't remember anything about that one. So I don't know if that one is similar to Safe in your mind, where there's anything about it that kind of makes it rise above the pack at all.
I never saw that one. So no.
Okay. All right. And then I did not see The One, where he co-stars opposite Jet Li. That was in like the early 2000s. Or Ghosts of Mars, which is that a John Carpenter movie?
It is a John Carpenter movie. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of the few Carpenters that I've not seen. So yeah, either of those, do you think there's anything there?
I have a soft spot for Ghosts of Mars, but I would not put it on this list, no. But Ghosts of Mars is fun in a very stupid sort of way.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about the Transporter movies. Have you seen any of those? What's your deal with?
I saw the first
films?
One. I think I saw the second one. I definitely did not see the third one. I saw the first two. I remember the first one. My biggest memory of the first one is all the trailers features a scene where someone shoots a rocket launcher at Jason Statham and he uses like a metal tray to deflect the rocket. And that was cut out of the final film. And I was like, why would you put that in the trailer and cut it out of the movie? Like that was part of the thing that sold me on the film, him deflecting a rocket, and they cut it out of the goddamn movie. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Forgive me if I've told this story before, but this was like a foundational memory for me, is seeing the trailer for The Transporter, not having really any idea who Statham was, because that came out in 2002. So I had not seen the early Guy Ritchie stuff yet. And I was like, who is this guy? What is this action stuff? I'm like a budding action aficionado at that point. And that moment happens in the trailer where he deflects this rocket with it's essentially like a metal serving tray. And I believe he deflected it into an open oven and they cut to an explosion right after that. And I was like, oh my God, that's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. So I hyped up all of my friends and we got like 10 or 12 of us to go to the theater because I was so excited about this moment and like showing them the trailer and being like, oh my God, like guys, this is going to be incredible. And then that ends up not happening. And we were all like so crestfallen. And I remember just being incensed. I was probably 16 and I went to whoever the manager of our local theater and I was like, can I get my money back? Because this moment was not in the trailer. And the guy was like, no, I'm sorry, you can't get your money back. And I just remember being like so disappointed in that. But, you know, with a little bit of distance from my utter disappointment there, there are some really amazing action sequences in that Transporter movie, that first one. And I think it still holds up pretty much. It's a very French movie, but I like it a lot. I think I'm actually a bigger fan of Transporter 2 because it retains a little bit of that kind of grounded, very serious Statham quality, but also some of the stunts are just completely bonkers. There's one part of the movie where he has a bomb strapped to the bottom of the car that he's driving. And he does like one of those corkscrew moves in a car and flips completely upside down and times it in such a way where a moving crane comes by and the hook on the crane scrapes the bomb off the bottom of the car while it's completely inverted. And then he lands and then the bomb explodes behind him. And it's just like, you know, this was 2005. And I was like, yes, this is cinema to me. This is exactly what I'm talking about. So I think one of those movies belongs on this list. But I don't know. Do you remember anything at all about Transporter 2 or should we just put the first one on there?
You know, let's put two on there just for you, Ben. I mean, I'm not going to, like, you sold me on that car stunt. I mean, the fact that they cut the goddamn rocket launcher tray will always, like, I would like to find what idiot told them to cut that out and be like, what were you thinking? Like, why would you, like, so, I just know that was like a studio note. Someone was like, this is too silly. And they cut it. And it just, like, everyone suffered because of that. So put part two on there. Do it.
Okay. All right. So we've got Snatch and Transporter 2 so far. I want to make a case for The Beekeeper, which we talked about last year when that came out. And I had a lot of fun with that movie. And I think it's kind of like the platonic ideal of a late stage Statham film, like where he is the guy in it and it's not necessarily as much of an ensemble kind of piece. And the lore and all of that stuff is just so ridiculous and over the top. And I just thought that movie was a lot of fun. So I wonder where you stand on The Beekeeper being one of our five.
Yes, I absolutely want The Beekeeper on this list. I love The Beekeeper. It is so silly and perfect. It is like a perfect movie for our current ridiculous era. Like one of my favorite reveals in that movie is where they find out like the main villain is like the son of the president. I was like, this is amazing. This is so good. Like this, like, and like all the bad guys are like so ridiculously bad. Like they're literally just like conning old people out of their fortunes. And it's like, it's so stupid, but it's like, that's literally like what, like, it's the perfect movie for whatever nightmare reality we live in right now, where there's a stoic guy who's beating the shit out of like con artists, because we live in the age of, this is like the golden age of grifters. Just grifters are literally running the government right now. And wouldn't we all love it if Jason Statham just punched them all in the face? Like that's like a, just a wonderful fantasy. And the fact that he's also like he's a literal beekeeper, but also beekeepers are like a secret CIA organization. And like Jeremy Irons is in the movie for some reason. And he's like a beekeeper. He's got that like accent. It's just like, oh, I loved it. I just love this silly movie. Like, I just love the movie like wastes no time either. Like it just starts like immediately. The Jason Statham character like shows up at an office building and blows up. Like, it's just like so, it's just like, it's a wonderful movie. I love The Beekeeper.
Yes. All right. So another one that you and I share, we're big fans of, and I'm not sure that many people have heard about this movie or seen this movie. I know we've talked about it on the podcast before briefly, but there's a movie called Wrath of Man that came out a few years ago. And I know that you wanted to stump for this one. So tell me why you think Wrath of Man belongs on the list.
Man, I love Wrath of Man. Wrath of Man is probably like my favorite Guy Ritchie movie, which is weird because it does not feel like a Guy Ritchie movie. Like, I feel like when you think of Guy Ritchie movies, you think of them as like these hyper stylized Tarantino-esque movies. Like Guy Ritchie, it was clearly very influenced by Tarantino, especially his early movies. And this is a lot different than that. This is a remake. I've never actually seen the original, so I don't really know how it compares. I also want to add the original is called Cash Truck, which is like the best title ever. But this movie is so like weird. It's very serious. Like it plays things completely straight, but it's very like dour and dark, but there's something like really just appealing about this movie to me. Jason Statham plays like this gangster whose son gets killed by these armored truck robbers. And he concocts this very elaborate plan to get revenge against them. And it's just like, I don't know, it's such an interesting role for him, because he's in many ways he's doing what he's always doing, where he's playing the stoic badass, but he's playing it on like a different tempo, where he's like, he's a lot more reserved. He's a lot less quippy, I want to say. Like, there's a lot of quipping in his movies, and he does not do very much quipping in this. He's mostly silent. And he's very focused on getting revenge. The supporting cast is dynamite in this. Josh Hartnett is in this as well. I was really fascinated by like the villains in this movie are probably like very interesting to me, because they're like these like ex-military guys who literally are just like bored with normal life. Like they miss like shooting guns so much, they decide to become like criminals. And I just think that's like,
It's almost like Den of Thieves or something, right?
Yeah. It's very similar to Den of Thieves, but like, whereas that movie is a little sillier, this is a lot more I find it fascinating that like when movies like this exist, where like they turn, America is very gung ho about the military, and I don't want to go off on like a long screed about that, but anytime a movie is like pointing out that like some people in the military are not heroes, they're people who just want to kill someone, I just think that's a fascinating thing for movies to do, because it's so like against like the the American mindset, that built in patriotism sort of thing. And, you know, Guy Ritchie is obviously not an American director, so I'm sure that has something to do with it. But I just always find that fascinating when movies take that, go down that route where they're like, these guys, like they literally say that in the movie that like, you know, they just, the normal life, they can't live it. They want to, they thrive on being shot at. And I just think that's so fascinating to make your villains that. And they're all scumbags. And Jason Statham's character is also a scumbag too, but he's a different kind of scumbag. Like no one in this movie is good. They're all like bad people. And I don't know. I just love this movie. I love the atmosphere. I love like the score is really like dark and ominous. And Andy Garcia pops up for some reason. He's like a cop. and like I just love this movie. I just find it like endlessly rewatchable, and it's probably like my favorite Statham movie and my favorite Guy Ritchie movie.
Awesome. Yeah, I love this one too. This came out in 2021, in case people were trying to track this down. Highly recommend checking out Wrath of Man. I think this is a lock for us, especially for you and me. I mean, maybe if we had like a bigger contingent of people that we had to battle with, Chris, but I think because you and I both are big fans of this movie, I'm just going to lock this in. So we have one spot left, and there are two movies that I think really deserve a place on this list. So we're in an interesting spot here. So the two films I'm talking about are Crank and Spy. Very, very different movies, but we're talking about Statham doing one thing really well. And I think Spy is a good example of showing that he does have a sense of humor and a sense of humor about himself and about the kind of things that he normally does on screen. And he's able to subvert that in a really, really funny way in this Paul Feig directed, Melissa McCarthy starring comedy that is much better than I thought the trailers made it out to be. I think this is my favorite Melissa McCarthy comedy. And then you've got Crank, which is like Neville Dean and Taylor, early 2000s. Like those guys are kind of like the epitome of down and dirty, gritty filmmaking, handheld. We're going to jump on rollerblades and skate through the streets to get some shots. Like the footage quality looks like it's done on like mini DV cam. And this movie is just, I think the opening line in the trailer was, "My name is Chev Chelios, today's the day I die." And it's basically like he gets poisoned and he has to shock his heart and keep his heart rate up to a certain level before he dies, basically, so he can discover who killed him and like try to get his revenge before he's killed. And that's like a very noirish plot, but it's done in a very like 2006 way in the form of Crank. So where do you stand on both of those, and how should we come down on this?
You know, so I want to say like when Crank and Crank 2 especially, which is called High Voltage, came out, I was so excited about those movies, and I love them when I saw them. I love that the character is named Chev Chelios. Just that alone, I was like, hell yeah. And I remember, and like, while I appreciate the manic style of these movies, especially the second one where like there's like a full-blown like kaiju fight where they're like a giant Jason Statham puppet guy fighting another guy, and like they're,
yeah,
like I appreciate the style, but I recently rewatched these movies for the first time since seeing them like in, you know, my youth, and I find them, I don't want to say unwatchable, but they're a lot to take in, man. I don't know if I'm just like, they're just like not my speed anymore, or but like I found them really annoying. Like they're so amped up and everyone is so over the top that it starts to get like really exhausting, and I can't really like take it anymore. Like when I was younger, I was like, hell yeah. Now I'm just like, I don't like these movies. I appreciate them, but I don't like them. So like between all these movies, I would vote for Spy, because Spy would have been on my list, because I have some issues with Spy, like pretty much every Paul Feig movie, it's way too goddamn long. Like, I don't know, I don't know who told Paul Feig that he has to make like super long comedies, but I wish they would like tell him it's okay to make a shorter movie. But he is so goddamn funny in the movie. Like, he's probably like the best part of that movie. He's just consistently funny playing this like ridiculously over the top asshole spy, and he's so good in that movie, and it makes me wish he would do more comedy, because he's clearly like naturally funny, and he so often plays like these like solemn badasses that like it's a shame that people don't put him in more comedies, because he would really nail it.
So I'm gonna relay one of my favorite spy memories to you, Chris. And if I'm wrong about this, I'm going to cut this part out of the podcast, but I'm going to leave it in if I'm right. So I have not seen this movie since theaters in 2015. So I may have the details wrong, but I remember laughing so hard where I think Statham's character loses his tuxedo or his suit or something at some point in the movie. And then he just walks back into frame near the end of the film next to Melissa McCarthy. And she says something like, "Where did you get that suit? Like, where did you get that tux?" And he just looks at her and he's like, "I made it, didn't I?" Like, that is just like, there's no other explanation. It's just like the idea that he just like sat there and sewed the suit together out of who knows what and where he found all this stuff. I just remember losing my shit in the theater and thinking that was so funny. So, yeah, I'll have to go back and double check that and make sure that's accurate. But I think that's right. And yeah. I agree. I think spies should be on this list. I felt the way that you felt about both of the Crank movies, about Crank 2 High Voltage when that came out. I remember being like in love with the first Crank movie and being so jazzed for the second one, and then just being so disappointed because they went like so far over the top. That kaiju sequence you mentioned, I think, was probably where the movie lost me. I was like, okay, this is like, I know the first movie is not the most realistic thing I'd ever seen, but this is just taking it to a whole new level. And then I believe the movie ends with him burning, like he's literally set
like
on fire.
Head
and
he's is
just
on
like
fire, yeah. And he gives like gives the
camera the finger.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, I feel like this is now getting personal. And so I just really had a very strong, visceral negative reaction to Crank High Voltage when I saw that. But I remember liking the first one. I have not revisited it. So now I'm kind of afraid to, and maybe I just never will. Maybe I'll just let the first Crank live in my mind as a really fun remnant of that time period, and I won't ruin that memory for myself. But yeah, I think we can put Spy on here. So that makes our list Transporter 2, Spy, Wrath of Man, The Beekeeper, and Snatch. Do you want to try to put these in order real quick? Is there like an actual ranking we should do? Should we throw that in here, or should we just call
it? I would put Wrath of Man at the top, and then everything else would be number two. I don't know.
Okay. Well, yeah, let's leave it officially unranked, but we'll know that Wrath of Man is number one in our hearts. Yeah, you can find a lot about Jason Statham's filmography at slashfilm.com. I'll try to link to a couple things in the show notes if we have any like special Statham forward articles or anything. Chris, any closing thoughts about Jason Statham before we go?
I don't know. Jason Statham, do more comedies. I want to see another funny Jason Statham movie. And of course, we should give a shout out to his very fun cameo in Collateral, where he gives Tom Cruise a briefcase and is never seen again.
Yes, definitely. All right. Well, yeah, that'll do it for today's episode of the show. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.